Welcome, welcome, one and all, everybody, to a very special Scunny Johnny podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Alamette. Aaron's not with me. We're doing some of these pop-up podcasts that we're going to be doing from time to time. Both Aaron and I will be doing these, I think. He's going to do the Aaron's asides here and there. Mine are going to be what we call the John Solo podcast versions here. So I wanted to come on now. We're doing a Saturday podcast here. So we're talking about the Badger game and talking a little bit about Badger hockey and the most recent Bucks game. Just because we want to get some of that talk out and try to save some time to make the podcast a little easier to digest throughout the week as we go. There's a lot of things going on now, especially with having Badgers-Packers football, having Badger basketball, having Badger hockey, having Bucks. I mean, the only thing we're without right now is the Brewers. So we're doing that, though. I want to start talking here. We're going to do a little bit of hockey. Badgers opened up Big Ten play this weekend. They got to play Minnesota. There's still another game tonight. They will play game two. They're playing at the Kohl Center. Of course, by the time you hear this, the game might have already been played, judging on whenever you get this. But Friday night, they played at the Kohl Center. It was a 3-2 loss for the Badgers. A very close game. Badgers came out, scored the first goal, go into the first intermission, ahead 1-0, scored the second goal, and then gave up three goals to end the third period. They outshot Minnesota. In fact, in the third period, when the game is still, it was 3-2 at the end of the second period, going into the second intermission, 3-2 Minnesota, Badgers outshot the Gophers 15-6 in that third period. Got a ton of pressure on them. They were pushing. They were definitely pushing, and Minnesota definitely kept them kind of off balance, kept them from being able to get the shots in, and their goalie played a great game. So they were able to hold on there and get that win. So that puts Wisconsin, it was, by the way, number 16 Minnesota, number 20 Wisconsin men's team. That puts the Badgers now, after getting swept by North Dakota last week, also now means that after losing to Minnesota, the Badgers are now 0-1 in Big Ten play. Minnesota and Michigan now sit atop the Big Ten, both of them at 1-0. Notre Dame at 1-2, Ohio State at 1-1, Michigan State and Penn State yet to play. Here's the thing coming up yet, though. Looking at the stats in terms of these teams, Penn State, and you don't think about this because Penn State only started having a hockey team, was it 5 years ago now? Their joining allowed the Big Ten to create their own hockey conference, moving the CCHA and the WCHA Big Ten teams into a single conference, and then adding Notre Dame as well. Giving them one of the strongest conferences in hockey. WCHA among the best. Of course, teams like Colorado College and Denver also have great programs. A lot of great stuff out east. The Hockey East teams getting BC and BU and all that out there too. But you know, having Michigan, Minnesota, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, Wisconsin all in one conference is pretty dominant. And in fact, there were three of the Frozen Four teams last year. From the one conference, even though they're not the one that won, because UMD captured another national title. The thing you want to look at, though, as I was saying, Penn State leads the country in goals per game. They're averaging 5.12 goals per game. I guess I didn't look at all of their schedule, but they're ahead of Princeton is second, St. Cloud State, number two ranked team right now in the country, St. Cloud State, 4.22 goals per game. Additionally, St. Cloud State, though, giving up only 1.67. Penn State giving up they're giving up like half of what they score. They score 5.12, give up 2.5 per game. That's a team they're going to have to come up against. They're going to have to come up against some of these other big-time scoring teams. Wisconsin, though, I guess, is ahead of some of these other schools in goals per game, 3.44. Leaves them sitting in, 15th. Tied for 15th with Colorado College. Michigan is at 3.38, Notre Dame 3.0, and I guess further down some of these other schools, though. So they definitely have the scoring. The problem is that they do also, while they do score 3.44, they're giving up 3.22. They definitely had a hard run of some of these games, and that's going to hopefully that'll fare well for them down the stretch as they continue to play these tough games and continue to hang in there in a very difficult division, conference. They definitely need to start showing things. They're playing Minnesota now. They're going to play Ohio State next, starting next Friday, the 16th. They really need to start seeing some wins here to start making this this season into something. They started off doing very well in that they did beat BC to start the season rather convincingly, but BC, as I said previously, kind of tailed off some in their games since playing Wisconsin. So that win hasn't looked quite as outstanding as you might hope it would look, but they've still been very good. The thing that does need to be said, and we haven't said it, and it's my fault, and I regret not saying this, but Wisconsin's women, again, number one team in the country, they have received every one of 15 first-place votes. Every one of them. They were one in the last poll. They opened the season ranked two and quickly moved up to one. They're 11-1. They have all 15 first-place votes, as I said. Minnesota and Clarkson fall right behind. Minnesota is 9-2-1. Clarkson is 9-1-0. Ohio State, BC, Northeastern, Cornell, UMD, St. Lawrence, and Colgate round out the top 10. Wisconsin's women is one of the greatest powerhouses in women's sports, probably, other than maybe UConn, but they're right there with them. They don't go through undefeated seasons the way that UConn does, and they have the Minnesota women's team right there every year as well. Clarkson is there sometimes, Ohio State, UMD's put up some teams, BC as well, but the Wisconsin team, this women's team, is the most dominant force in women's hockey, and just continues to roll. That team is amazing. I guess try to look up to see if I can get some of their the women's D1 stats, because they are just rolling through teams. And that's clearly one of the greatest highlights, and one of the things that needs to be talked about in Wisconsin athletics is the strength of that women's hockey program. It is just an amazing force, and it has been a problem with this podcast that I have not mentioned them yet, and that's absolutely on me. Every week I go into thinking, man, this is the week we should definitely make sure we're talking about it, and every week I just don't. They don't have the leading point scorer or anything in here. The leading point scorer on the women's team is Abby Roque. She's a junior forward, and she has 16 points. The leader is from Clarkson, Elizabeth Giguere, Emma Maltese from Ohio State, and then Lauren Gabel from Clarkson. And then a really fun name, a junior from Clarkson, Michaela Pejlova, and I'm absolutely ruining that, I'm sure. But you think about that, Clarkson has three of the top four scorers in this league, and in fact, four of the top six, and Wisconsin has one of the top six, and still Wisconsin just finds ways to win those games. It's not necessarily just single individual performances, even though Clarkson clearly has a couple of those great lines. Clarkson is second in the country in goals per game, right behind St. Anselm. And I guess just St. Anselm is just not playing the sort of competition everyone else is. Wisconsin women getting 3.5 goals per game, but surrendering a mere 1.25 goals a game. That's pretty impressive. Their power play percentage is 25%. And their penalty kill actually is oddly low at 88.24. Not among the highest, but I mean, Minnesota, the number two ranked Minnesota's penalty kill is just at 78.57%. So, Wisconsin just doing very well at those things. One of the highest power play percentages in the country, having at least a very good penalty kill, getting the special teams working in their way, and well, no shorthanded goals. Oddly, Northeastern has three, which is kind of a ridiculously high number. But that women's team is ridiculously good, not giving up much, getting good points, definitely just great discipline, great control. They understand who they're playing, what they're doing, and what they've got to get to every week. That team is amazing. So the women's Badger team, definitely just among the best that there are in any sport that there is to talk about. Sticking with the Badgers, there was, of course, a game today, as I record, Saturday afternoon. It's 3:20-something or whatever. Just finished watching the Badger game. It started off definitely with a bang, and you know, ended up kind of walking away from us after that, because it was 7-0. And then from the long 71-yard touchdown run by Jonathan Taylor, Penn State outscored the Badgers 22-3. Jack Cohn gets his second start. Both his starts have been on the road. And here's the thing, I mean, I want to get, I guess, through the just the stuff to let you know what happened if you weren't watching. Jack Cohn, 9 of 20 for 60 yards and 2 picks, including the backbreaker at the end. I guess it wasn't really backbreaker because that game was over. All they could have done was covered at that point. It would have been a bad beat, I guess, if you were betting Penn State if Wisconsin scored that last touchdown. Because they did get a weird turnover at the end of the game where the Penn State running back was going in motion in front of the quarterback, and the ball snapped and hit him. And the Badgers got the ball back after going out on a going for it on fourth down. And they had to the Badgers fell on the ball. Badgers tried to get in the end zone. And the play was there. I couldn't tell you. I guess I got caught up on the play. Didn't see who it was. I think it was Danny Davis, maybe. Or maybe it was A.J. Taylor. I didn't see who it was who was breaking open on the kind of deep post route there. He was open in the end zone, and they keep talking. The announcers were just terrible in this game because they kept saying things that didn't happen. They're like, yeah, the safety's reading the quarterback's eyes the whole way, steps up and makes the play. He only made the play because the quarterback didn't throw at his receiver. If he was watching the quarterback read the receiver, he should have gone to the receiver, but he didn't because the receiver was darned open. You know, he was really open. The play was just thrown behind, and the safety was out of position enough that he made a play. There was also another great point in the game where the announcers were talking about the game, and they said, look, here, you're going to see Connolly and Edwards got a great play, broke up a play in the backfield, and they even drew out. They're like, watch them, they're going to do a crossing stunt here. And what actually happened is that they just read the run and ran straight ahead. They didn't cross at all. Even though they drew it on the screen that the two of them were going to cross, they didn't cross. They, in fact, both stayed on you know, like, Edwards was on the left of the defensive left the entire play, and Connolly was always to his right, and it was very weird. They didn't seem to know what was being done at any point, but there were 3 turnovers by the Badgers in this game, and they definitely massively hurt, or no, I'm sorry, maybe there were 4 with the final pick, I'm sorry. But this team just couldn't get anything going in terms of total offense. Just the inability to throw or keep the ball where it needed to get to, throwing less than 50%, and throwing for 60 total yards on 20 attempts. That's just, it was something that was hard to do, but here's the big takeaways I have to do from this game. Jonathan Taylor played great, 20 carries, 185 yards. He's a great player, but he didn't play almost anything in the fourth quarter. He should have had another 200-yard game, except for the fact that he is completely incapable of catching a ball. He had a play early in the game where Cohn kind of rolls out, looks over, throws him the ball. He's standing alone 5 yards down the field by the sideline, and just drops the ball. Like, nobody's within 7-8 yards of him, and he just doesn't catch the ball. If Jonathan Taylor wants to be a stud in this league, he wants to boost the number of touches and carries he gets. If he wants to be somebody who's going to be playing on Sundays in 2 years from now, he has to learn how to catch a ball. You can't go to the NFL and not know how to catch a ball. There's just no way that he's not being taught that. There's a reason, probably, why he didn't get the sort of recruiting look that he could have gotten had he been able to catch a football. It's difficult. Having to put Garrett Groshek out there on those plays, and God bless him, he's good. He's good. He's not great. He's a good player. And he's nice. And I still don't like, you know, Amherst Falcons. But that being said, we need Jonathan Taylor to be in every play back. The Badgers need that from him, and they're not getting it from him. 2 years into this, he still can't catch, and he can't block it well enough to stay on the field for all 3 plays. So the announcers are just shocked that he's not out there, but he can't be in that game when they're losing. When you have to throw, you have to take him out. He has to come off the field, and he has to stand on the sidelines because he can't catch and he can't pass block in the way that Garrett Groshek can. That needs to be addressed. That needs to be changed, and Jonathan Taylor has to make that the priority of his entire football life from here on out for the entirety of this season and getting ready for next season. In a fun quirk, I just want to point out that there was also one rush by Jonathan Thomas for Penn State. So we have Jonathan Taylor, they have Jonathan Thomas. So a Wisconsin-Penn State duo of Jonathan Taylor and Thomas. There's only so many people who are going to get that. But anyhow, Trace McSorley looked pretty good in the game. He didn't kill the Badgers. He had some good runs. He had some good third down conversions. I mean, he's been playing there for several years. He's had a bunch of starts. He's a guy who understands the situation. It wasn't too big for him. Jack Cohn has made two starts at Northwestern and now at Penn State. And people are tearing him apart on Twitter right now, and it's just ridiculously unfair. He's a true sophomore. He's a true sophomore who has started two games in his career. They wanted to redshirt him, but he has now played in three games, so I don't know if they're going to get to do that. They're going to have a hard time keeping him out of any more games. He can play in a fourth game and still keep his red shirt. And I know they want to do that, but it's going to be difficult to do if we can't get Hornibrook out there. And I think you need to start looking at this and realize that Hornibrook at least gives you the threat of the throw. He's not a game-changing quarterback. He's not going to be some Russell Wilson player. He's just not going to be that, and you have to get over that. You have to stop waiting for Russell Wilson to walk back in through that door. But Hornibrook is a solid quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He can fake the ball well. He can read the defense fairly well. He has good touch. Not great, but good touch. And he can make the throws you need him to make. So people need to calm down. First off, on attacking Jack Cohn. He's a kid. He really is just a kid. He's got two starts. They're both tough games on the road. The Badgers weren't going to win this game. They were a 10-point underdog on the road in Happy Valley, in the largest stadium, I think. I believe it's that or the Big House. The largest stadium. 100,000-plus people there today. And you have to calm down on him. Okay, he's going to get some looks. He's going to get some time. And he's getting a chance to play. And they definitely just shortened up the playbook for him. He did not get the full range of plays. He did not get a chance to make the full range of passes. He's working his tail off. Remember in college, these are kids. They're just, they really are. And it's terrible to start attacking them. And if anybody has ever watched that Gundy blow up about, I'm a man, I'm 40, he's exactly right when he says that, because these are kids. Stop attacking a sophomore in college for not being, you know, ready to go out there against a very good Penn State team and light them up. He'll get there someday, probably, but just not yet. And the other thing is that Graham Mertz is still on his way. Graham Mertz, who, by the way, this week against a previously undefeated team threw for 6 touchdowns in a high school playoff game, he's going to be pretty good. So he's on his way, too. This team's going to be all right. We were looking this week at some of the rankings in terms of what Paul Chryst's incoming recruiting class is looking like. And this should get at least some Badger fans feeling a little bit better. As 24/7 has the Badgers ranked 29th, Scout has them ranked 30th, and Rivals has the Badgers ranked 24th. Depending on how you look at it, they have one or two 5-stars. I mean, they all have different rankings and how they go through this. The other thing to remember is the Badgers right now have 17 recruits lined up for next year, and they're pretty well set in. These rankings make an additional plus, like you get boosted up for recruiting more players the more you give out. So like Minnesota last year moved way up and jumped Wisconsin in the final recruiting score, which, you know, they should go back a couple years later and rescore some of these. But Minnesota beat Wisconsin because they just recruited more people because they wanted to form the school in PJ Fleck's image. And right now, even though they've recruited 25 players at Minnesota and Wisconsin's recruited 17, Wisconsin is still ahead of Minnesota in every one of the rankings that's out there. Those three, 24/7, Rivals, and Scout, which are the three big ones that are out there at least. So Minnesota's 24, not 25. But still, that is the big difference right now that boosts Minnesota up there, is that they just are recruiting more people. That's not really helping them win. You can look at that team and say Minnesota has their quarterback, and he's been okay. I think he's thrown 9 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. And he's not really killing it. But you look over there at Martinez with the Huskers in Nebraska, and that guy has thrown very well. He's been playing pretty well. He's been controlling the ball. He has way more than twice as many touchdowns as interceptions. Throwing very well, he has twice as many touchdowns as interceptions. And it's something where he's somebody you look forward to as being far better, far more ready for this game than anybody else. So Nebraska has to look better down the road than what you're getting out of Minnesota. One of the other things that happened in Wisconsin this week has been, of course, Badger basketball. It's the start of the men's season, and last year was definitely a down year for the Badgers, a difficult year for the Badgers. But what we were able to do is get one opening victory here, and Ethan Happ started off the season with a triple-double. So that's an exciting thing to see. It's good. It was not against top-flight competition. Well, I won't even pretend it was. Like we stated, it was Coppin State. I don't know exactly when Coppin was granted statehood, but Coppin State was the Badgers' victory. And it was a pretty clear and easy victory for the Badgers, too. Like I said, we had, I think the last, I'm trying to remember even when the last triple-double was, but I think it was Josh Gosser. And it was basically the game you expected it to be. There were not many surprises. Badgers got up big early. They stayed ahead. Ethan Happ, he was already on triple-double alert by halftime because everybody was already kind of talking about that and how he was very close. He was actually the furthest away in points. I believe he had 10 rebounds, 6 or 7 assists, and like 4 points. He ended with 10 points, 11 rebounds, 12 assists. Trice scored 21 points. Dimitri Trice. Pritzel had 16, 10 from Happ. They played very well against Coppin State. That's just, it's a game they had to win. You can't lose that game. You can't start your season off losing to Coppin State. Coppin State, who just not particularly score high in their own conference. So that was just an easy start. Gets the Badgers going, gets them back on the field, or court, pardon me. So used to football. Gets them back out there and lets them get going. They're going to have a little bit tougher spring coming up ahead. They're going to be playing Xavier and Stanford, but in between there, they will play Houston Baptist. That's one they got to win, I'll say that. So they're going to be on FS1. Coming up against Xavier, they'll be on the Big Ten Network against Houston Baptist. The Coppin State game was a very difficult one, and my father was very unhappy because it was only on Big Ten Plus. And that's, of course, what happens when you have somebody like Coppin State coming in, is you're not likely to get on all the TV channels. It makes it hard for some of these early games. That's why we all get looking forward to these Big Ten games down the stretch here. Badgers have a good long Big Ten season here. They've got, I'm trying to see who's even ranked right now in the Big Ten, but they will be playing number 19 Michigan. They've got at Illinois, number 24 Purdue. Michigan Purdue, number 10 Michigan State, and that looks like it right now in terms of their things. Two against Michigan, one against Michigan State, one against Purdue. So, not the hardest of necessary schedules there in terms of how the Big Ten lines up for them, but we'll have to see how the season plays out. I feel way more confident in the season this year than last year. Last year, we felt very good about it going in, and just the number of injuries really killed this team. So, I'm very excited. I don't know that this is where Aaron's going to fill me in on NBA stuff, and I'm going to fill him in on Badger basketball and some of the Badger football stuff as we go, too. But I wanted to at least get the Badger football game and some of this basketball talk out of the way. I don't think the Badgers necessarily at this point are looking at a Big Ten title, but they definitely have a good chance to push teams like Illinois and Maryland and try to get up towards what, you know, Michigan, Purdue, Indiana, well, not Indiana necessarily this year, and Michigan State this season. Michigan State started off 0-1 in a non-conference game against a very tough KU. So we'll get to see what that looks like going on. And we always know that Michigan State's one of those teams that builds and gets better as the season goes on. So we'll play them very late in the year, so that should be a good game, hopefully, at the time we get to play Michigan State. But Badger basketball in full swing at this point. Badger hockey, men's and women's in full swing. Badger football tailing off. 6-4 team, two games left. So just hoping to finish off this season. Got Minnesota to end the year. If Minnesota doesn't win at least two games from this point out, then they won't be going to a bowl game again, and they've got to play Northwestern. At this point, for the Badgers to get into the Western Conference Championship or Western Division Championship for the Big Ten Conference, the Badgers would need Northwestern to lose out. I don't see that happening. They do have to play Purdue today. I think that Purdue will beat them. I don't think they're going to lose to Minnesota, though. So I think Northwestern's going to end up with that. The West, Badgers are going to have to start looking at where they're going for a bowl game and start getting ready for that, and then start building this team to be ready for next year. They're going to lose a bunch of guys on the offensive line. They're going to lose a bunch of linebackers. They're going to keep Orr, who will come in and get a lot more playing time next year. But, yeah, just start getting ready for next year. They have a lot of very young corners, and they got a lot of very exciting talent coming in next year. We'll see more of Bryson Williams. We will be losing Segapalu. We'll see Williams, the guy from Lincoln, Nebraska, who was not recruited by Nebraska until they fired their coach. So football is looking to next year at this point. Basketball and hockey are very much ready for this year and building towards who they're going to be, and we'll see what this team looks like. Very excited about each of those as we're moving forward. I'm going to touch on briefly the Bucks. We do have to tell you, the Milwaukee Bucks, the NBA Milwaukee Bucks, defeated the Warriors. They beat Dub Nation. If you're watching Aaron Flottam on Twitter, it's been pretty phenomenal because he was very, very excited. All of Wisconsin Twitter seemed to blow up. I'll tell you, though, it took a little bit because, like I've said before, the Bucks, more than any other team, are more of a city team. The Brewers are very much a statewide team. The Packers are obviously a nationwide sort of phenomenon in terms of how they their fan base operates. Badgers are definitely a statewide team, as the borders of the state extend to the borders of the, or the borders of the university extend to the borders of the state and beyond. And yeah, the Bucks, though, are more of a Milwaukee team. They're more of just, you know, they're part of that kind of phenomenon there, and it's different. It's a different feel for the Bucks than it is for any of the other teams in the state of Wisconsin. But still, everybody's excited to see that the Bucks beat Dub Nation. All right, that's an incredible thing to have seen done. They beat them by 23 points too. Like as Aaron said on Twitter, they out Dub Nation. Dub Nation. They got Bledsoe had 26 points. Klay Thompson had 24 against him. So the Bucks kind of led throughout. They got ahead in the second quarter and kept a pretty comfortable margin throughout the game. They didn't just get them on a day where nobody played either. I mean, let's look through some of what they had. Bell, Durant played. He had 31 points. Bell had 22. Curry had 26. Thompson had 33. Maybe not Draymond. Iguodala had... Oh, I'm sorry. Those are minutes. Sorry about that. Points, yeah. Thompson had 24. Curry had 10. Durant had 17. So, I mean, they're all playing fairly good minutes, and they're rotating well, and they do what they do. 6 points from Iguodala. 15 points from Cook. I mean, so They had stuff going there, but yeah, 26 from Bledsoe, 24 from Giannis, 17 from Middleton, 20 from Brogdon, 15 from Connaughton. Yeah, so definitely a good team. I mean, they've got some depth. They had five different players going to double digits in this game, three different players with 20 plus. So you got to feel very good about this Bucks team. I think ESPN put them as the top of the power rankings now, the 9-2 Bucks. Number one in the power rankings for the NBA, and they're playing the Clippers. At halftime, they're up 64-62 right now. But, yeah, to see the Bucks on top of the power rankings is a little crazy for us. They're now a game and a half behind Toronto, who's 11-1. The Bucks are 9-2. But, yeah, here's the thing. For ESPN rankings, to have the Bucks reach out and be the top team in their power rankings this last week, that means a ton, because they definitely don't have anything to do with reality. What the power rankings mean is just kind of what people already think, and they tie that together with stats they have pulled together to try to reinforce a thing they already think, which is why the NFL power rankings get made the way they are. It's just taking, the problem is, and I'll say it this way, ESPN believes in the storylines. They have the storylines, they like to tell the storylines, they make it very easy to do it as like a newspaper article, that there's a story. A story is unfolding, and it is unfolding in a way that they all expect. Well, that's not what happens in sports. It's just not the way that sports work. Sometimes they're just better teams, sometimes they had a better day. But we're talking about better teams. And the storylines that they like in the NBA are that the Lakers are going to grow and get better, or that the Warriors are undefeatable, or things like that. They like those sorts of storylines. And none of the storylines that ESPN likes or that the NBA likes involve Milwaukee. Or, as you should properly say in Wisconsin, Milwaukee. So there's no storyline in which they want to hear about the Bucks. There's no storyline in which they want to say that the Bucks are a team to beat or somebody you should be excited about. And it's hard to sell Giannis just because he's such a just sweet, nice guy. He's just a nice guy who just works, and he can't be brash enough or commercialized enough because he's just nice and good and works. And he just wants to spend his time working, and it's hard to do that. It's exactly why Major League Baseball has trouble with Mike Trout. He's just a nice guy who just likes to work and wants to win, and that's all he does. Whereas LeBron has so many other things that he wants to do or wants to be, and that allows for him to be the sort of person that they can get behind and try to make a superstar and a storyline, because he's a story of his own. Giannis isn't that. Giannis' storyline is that, well, it's actually a far better story, but it's hard to talk about on the Sports Center or to repeat during a game or to make it part of a broader storyline about him and how it affects some sort of aspect during the game, other than that he just keeps working harder than you. And he's a freak of nature in his size and athletic ability. But this Bucks team is special, and we're definitely going to keep talking about them. When we get back together on Monday night, when Aaron and I get together, we will definitely talk about this Bucks game against the Clippers. Hopefully the Bucks can hold on and win this one too, stay just a game back of the Raptors, who is a team they've already beaten once this year. But that's at least a good ending to this team and a good ending to this podcast, I think. So thank you for joining me for the John Solo podcast here, the first one of possibly many. And thank you for listening to the podcast. You can, of course, find the podcast at ScannyJohnny1. You can follow me at JBarn54. You can follow Aaron Flottam at CheddarTalk. And you can reach out to the show at theScannyJohnny@gmail.com. Email address if you have anything else you want to add to us or talk to us about, or if you just want to message us on Twitter, you can definitely do that. Thank you for listening to us, however you listen to us, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or Google Play. Wherever you are, though, please do, if you listen on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and give us a review online so that it makes it easier for other people to find us. Please tell all your friends and family. Tell them to download, even if they don't want to listen to me or Aaron or whoever. But tell them to give us a chance. Listen to us, and we're going to be talking Wisconsin sports over and over again here. And whether you're on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin. You can't see it. You can't hear it, but it's there. You can't see it. It's surrounding you.